Hello, everyone. Welcome to Boom Chuck, the Drummers Podcast. I have my good friend here, Mateo. I guess, yeah, I don't want to slander this last name, because you got one of those last names that people could slander. So I've been practicing. Ready?
Awesome.
All right. Vascanian. No,
that's great.
Is that right?
It's Vascanian.
Vascanian. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But I don't know how it's really said. Like, I've never been to Armenia and asked an Armenian how you would say that name, but my family says it Vascanian.
Vascanian. So. I mean, that's what it should be. So
yeah, it's like a really fun dance at a wedding. You have a Vascanian.
Oh yeah, know? Perfect. That's perfect. Well, you know what? Being from Detroit, being from like that, I still have, even though I live in North Carolina now, it's a very Canadian. So yeah. You know, I still got that in me, which, you know, it is what it is. Anyway,
where's your southern drawl now that you're in North Carolina?
Oh, I can lay it on real thick, man. Yeah, yeah. But that's the other thing too is, you know what? I've been inside for over a year, so I'm kind of like, okay, this is. I talk to my family, and that's about it. So, the southern drawl is not coming in as quickly as I want it to. You know.
Yeah, that's fair. You're not exposed as much.
That's right. So yeah, man. Thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it. It's good to see you. Beard's looking good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's,
man.
Good to see you too, bro. Usually it'd be like at least once a year, you know, we get to hang out.
I know, something. Been a while. So this podcast is all about drums. That's why I wanted to talk to you, because I've gone all over the place. I've met all these people, but like, me and you hit it off because it's all about drums and groove and everything. And we can nerd out about gear all day and every day. So this is what this is about. I know you. I know some stories that are probably gonna come out. But the biggest thing is, you know, there's things I don't know, and you know, I want to figure it out. I want to know what made you you. So I guess my first question to you would be, how and why did you start playing the drums?
My dad's a drummer. There was always a kit in the house. It was always this old 1950s Rogers kit sitting around.
Nice.
My dad still has it. It's in like pristine condition. It's insane.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so it was always there for me to tap around. He was always super. He was like crazy. He was like one of those crazy sports dads, but about music.
Yeah,
like he was like, you gotta play an instrument. Like, I don't care what instrument you choose, but you have to play an instrument.
Yeah,
and you have to at least try. And you're starting with piano, and then you can choose another instrument from there.
So you started with piano.
Yeah. For like 3-4 years, I took lessons and did that whole, you know, I'm a kid going to some old lady's house, learning how to play the piano thing. And I just wasn't, you know, I was a shitty kid. I didn't like to do things when I was told. So the drums called to me because they were loud, and I could get out some aggression on them.
Nice. How many years or whatever did you take piano lessons?
I think about 4 total.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like what age?
That would have been when I was like... probably 7. I think they started me at 7, so I did it to about 11.
So you were old enough to like start talking theory and like this other stuff. Your brain could kind of comprehend that and stuff, right? A little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I wish I had like now, like, you know, of course, I've been in this band now for a decade, so
right.
I've said this every year for a decade. I wish I had gone back and just brushed up on the piano stuff like
same.
Every year.
Yeah.
But I'm over here like, you know, they're talking about what, you know, what they're tuned their guitars to and stuff. And I'm just
right.
like, yeah, the cymbals, you know, they're good. You know, I tune them with tape.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Yeah, exactly. No, I suffer from that too. So I did piano, man, I think I was 6 and I did it for 3 years. And my mom was a pianist. I actually have her grand piano here now, which is crazy, but I mean, I can do scales. I'm good at that C scale, but
I can nail that one every time.
Yeah.
Man.
But so the funny thing is, like, when I went to college, right, I was a music major. I was forced to do theory, so I can understand it. You can put a marimba in front of me all day, but nah, piano, I can't do it. So I understand that need to like want. And Chris and I can talk theory and stuff when we're writing and stuff, but yeah, I totally get where you're coming from with that. That's crazy.
Isn't it funny how with the piano, like, I'm always, our keys player is always like, you know, I don't understand why you don't think you can play, you know, the keys. I'm like, because I can't get my hands to do different things. And he's like, you play the drums. What are you talking about? I was like, well, not my specific fingers and shit too, man.
Right.
I don't like, and I've worked very hard to just have basic control of my limbs as it is playing the drums.
Right.
That's a whole other, you know, project.
Yeah. No joke. Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like, imagine how much time we'd have to put in to figure out keys just to get by. But it's like, man, if we just put that time into some rudimentary drumming, like, we would be better drummers. Okay, so you always had a kit in the house. I'm jealous of the was it a Rogers Holiday?
Yeah.
Dude, I used to have one of those. I found it in a trash can.
Really?
Dude, I found it in a trash can. I ended up selling on eBay, like, in parts. I wanted to restore it. It was pretty beat up, but that's pretty awesome that he still has that. So when it came about, obviously, you know, as you grew up, high school, college, like, you know, when this band or the band you're currently in, Wild Adriatic, which we'll talk about in a minute, when did it get to the point where you kind of buckled down? Because you have a unique playing style. You're very animated when you get into it, and your grooves are super solid. When did it turn into, like, I'm going to do this? This is me.
Pretty quickly, honestly. Like, in high school, when I was in eighth grade, some of my friends at another school wanted to make a band.
Okay.
So we made, you know, we had a trio. He played bass. Well, the other guy played guitar, so it was easy.
Yeah.
They both sang terribly, and I didn't even attempt to sing because I was that bad. But we, you know, we recorded a bunch of songs on a Talkboy in my basement.
Nice.
And then that formed, like, our first band. And by sophomore year, Travis, who's in Wild Adriatic, was in that band with me. And we were basically doing the high school version of touring, which is like,
right,
we played every damn high school battle of the bands and right, talent show and whatever would let us in, you know, up and down through New York. So
yeah,
very early on, it became like, I don't know, it was a slippery slope for it being my entire identity, though. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, it's been 20 some odd years where people know me like, oh, that's that drummer guy.
Yeah. Well, and that's the funny thing, too, is you're recognizable, obviously, with the beard. That was I always mention it because, like, I remember that when we first met and we first started playing, it was at that Six Flags, like, yeah, the Six, which is so random, but
Wing Fest at
the
Six
Wing
Flags,
Fest,
man.
But your dude, but your merch was your face, like, the band's merch was like your beard in a way. I mean, the nice thing is, I'm jealous. This is about as long as I can go, but I'm just like, oh, you know, like, you've owned it. You've kind of developed this, I don't want to say character, because it is you. It's not a character. It's like, you've kind of developed this persona as the band has grown and whatever. And, man, you're you and you're unique. And, again, this is why I wanted to talk to you, because it's like the way you play the animated. Like, I was just even looking through pictures and, like, you'll do a fill and stand up and just make this crazy face and just go whatever. But it makes you play better. And it makes the audience engagement, does all this stuff. So, like, when did all that come? You know what I mean? Obviously with the band and playing and beginning being more comfortable, like, but, like, you developing as the drummer and your style, when did that kind of take hold of you and be like, this is just me, this is how I do it, and this is how it works?
I mean, that is all my dad.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
My dad is 100% like direct influence on everything that I do, like, musically and sort of business-wise and kind of how I run things. Like,
yeah.
So in that way, he was always like, hey, if I'm at the back of the auditorium, I can't see you unless you have big hands.
Right.
And he was like, you know, big hands is a thing. You know, you want people to notice you and to see you, you know, see you, and that brings them into the show more.
Yeah.
And so that started, you know, playing in my high school talent shows. He was like, big hands, right before the show, he'd say.
That's awesome.
You know, right before we go on.
Yeah.
Have big hands.
That's cool. So. And that's the cool thing is, like, there's times where I'm very technical. So, like, I have to, like, when I get into it, yeah, I can move and do whatever. But I'm very, like, when I'm in the pocket, it's like eyes are closed. I'm just kind of like grooving. And there's a lot of drummers that
you are. Yeah. You're lockstep, man.
That's the funny thing is, like, I know, like, we've tried to, like you said, big hands. It's like genius. But, like, I've tried to, like, go big and do all this stuff. And I think I'm moving. Like, I'm just like, oh, dude, I'm like hurting my neck. I'm like, oh, I'm headbanging. I'm turning right and left and blah, blah, blah. And again, I'm a big dude. So, like, if I think I'm going, like, and I see a video of it and it looks like I'm just kind of bobbing my head just a little bit. And I'm like, I'm trying so hard to do this. So funny.
That's with me with smiling. Like, my fiance is always like, you know, sometimes you look like really intense on stage. So I'll try to smile. And then after the set, I'll be like, you know, how'd I do? And she's like, you looked like you were like, it was like a painful smirk the whole time. I was like, oh,
that's
cool.
Hilarious.
So I nailed it.
And congratulations, by the way, on your engagement. That's awesome.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Well, cool. Yeah. So we talked about, obviously talked about kind of how this developed and your style and everything like that. I'm going to list the bands and you may have more. I don't know. You're busy. You're doing this. You're out there doing it. Obviously you're in Wild Adriatic, a band from upstate New York, but you guys have gone everywhere, right? And you said you've been doing this for 10 years now. The band's been together 10 years.
Yeah, this is 10 years. I joined the band about a week ago, 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. That's pretty, yeah. That's pretty crazy. Yep. And you guys have toured, I mean, quote unquote, worldwide, right?
Yeah, literally. Yeah. We've done it, man.
That's amazing. And obviously the same guys, before we move on, I did have a question about it. So you, when I met you, you guys were the power trio. You had, you know, the three of you holding it down. It was great. When did you guys decide to become, because now you have, when you go out full band, I think you still do trio stuff, or like obviously when, before COVID hit and all that stuff, you guys still do just trio shows, right? And then have a quote unquote full band. So you have like six people now.
Yeah, we do. That's our ideal. That's the product we'd like to bring to the world when we can afford to do so.
Oh, yeah. That's a big, what brought that on? Like what was your, I mean, as the band, as the three of you, what was the voice of like, man, we could do more. We could bring in horns. We could bring in keys. Like, what was that? What was that kind of like as you guys wanted to like grow your sound a little bit?
I think a lot for us was we kind of felt stuck after a while doing like the power trio riff rock thing, you know, like our first few releases are very much that. And while we love a lot of those songs and we're actually like now, of course, talking about going back and be like, we got to write some riff shit again. But, you know, at the time we were just like, you know, it's just like we're getting a little bored on stage. We're trying to like spice things up. We were trying to, you know, and you've seen us before. So, you know, we jam a little bit, like we try to extend things and create new pieces on stage. But like that doesn't work so well with a trio. I mean, at least for us, for our trio, we find a lot more comfort in having other musicians on stage to lean on. And, you know, obviously, usually the keys and horn guys are the theory guys, the insane, like, jazz guys that can really help elevate stuff to, you know, a cool level. So that's when we were like, let's do it.
And then all friends, all from upstate New York guys, like, that you've known through the years and just kind of started? Or
the horn section, they're actually a husband and wife. Okay. They were from another band called West End Blend out of Hartford, Connecticut. Okay. They live in Boston now. So, but, yeah, the keys player's a local cat.
It's interesting to hear because, like, I mean, did you think, obviously, bringing people on stage is different. Did you guys ever think, like, we could just do tracks, we could do this, we could do this, or was it always just kind of like, basically, if you want that sound, we got to bring in someone there?
We have an unreasonable fear and not hatred, but it's close to hatred of tracks. I don't know, and I know it's unreasonable because I love a lot of bands that use it very, very well.
Hello.
I love a lot of bands. Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about. What? You guys do that?
Sometimes.
You have tracks?
Yeah, some songs we do,
I see, that's the thing. It sounds good. It's really tastefully done, but I just don't, we never really need it. Like, horns on track is probably, that's kind of lame. You know what I mean? It's one thing to have effects and sort of like different swoops and pulls and having some percussion on a track from time to time is kind of cool. But for us, we were like super hard with the vintage vibe at the time. You know, I bought a 65 Ludwig kit to tour with this band. Like, we were wearing ties and trying to like look like classy rock and roll guys, whatever the hell that means. And so, like, at the time, it just, you know, it just made sense for us, like, just to go all live, let's go natural. We were trying to record analog at a certain point, like, you know, that aesthetic was important. And then also, like, you can't really jam with tracks.
You definitely can't. Like, if you do, then it's like, you're not jamming. Like, it's like, we're going to jam for 8 bars. That's it. And it's just like, that's not jamming, you know, like, tracks have only failed me once. But it was embarrassing, and it was like,
it sounds like a nightmare, dude.
And it was our laptop. We had an old laptop. Like, now it's like, okay, we went and bought a new laptop because
you only need that to happen
it
once.
It was a nightmare. And then the funny thing was, we had 2 shows left. We were in Denver, and the computer glitched. So like Ableton, everything was fine, but it kicked our click and eighth note like back. So I'm still playing, but we can hear the tracks, and we are not on. And it's like a doubled guitar, a bass, and then we're like, I just ended up stopping it. And I was like, totally embarrassed. And it was like, oh, man. So we had one show after that. We were just honest with everybody. Like, hey, our computer may explode. If our computer explodes, we're just going to play all of our old stuff that doesn't need tracks, you know, kind of thing. Which is what we did when it died. Yeah. I just shut everything down and we played songs that we hadn't rehearsed or done anything for a tour. And it was like, oh, okay, that's great. Like you said earlier, like, when we can afford to have the people out, that's the thing. But I'm also like, yeah, I'd love to go tour with a backing band and like other people, but we don't make any money. So the fact that like, if we don't make any money, how are we supposed to pay these people? You kind of thing. So yeah, it's a weird thing. But I guess the nice thing is you guys could do it as the trio, right? So
yeah, we could and we have, and we just, you know, we prefer, we have our friends now. It's absolutely like the whole vibe. We did all those Skynyrd shows with the whole band and it's like, it kind of solidified. Like this is who we are.
No, that's cool. Okay, so on top of Wild Adriatic, you and Travis, your singer in Wild Adriatic, you guys are doing a duo.
Yeah.
Is that legit band or is that just you guys kind of going in, like you said, going in just doing some covers?
It's totally not legit at all. It's a very much just a cover. Like we don't want to work jobs. So like if we can sit in the corner of a bar for a few hours a week and make, you know, a couple hundred bucks, that's great. That's what we're doing.
Well, and that even when COVID hit, you two were doing, you set up your electronic kit outside of his window, right? And you guys were just playing, like, live streaming like that. It was genius. If you don't want to work and you want to go make a couple hundred bucks in a bar, why not? That's exactly what you should be doing, right? If you're going to be a working drummer.
Because, like, some people don't like that. I totally get it. Like, some musicians aren't into that, but I don't mind. I really don't. It's fun.
Did that come from, a couple years ago, you guys were playing the Rock Boat, right? Like you guys would come down and do that every year for a while, right?
Yeah, we did it 4 years in a row, actually.
So did the covers obviously every band and every drummer or every musician, you know, a bunch of covers, like, you know, kind of how you learn and craft your ways. But like you guys were doing cover specific shows on the boat, right? From what I remember.
Yeah. Our first year on the boat, it was my way of like trying to get us in front of more people and add an extra show. Like they gave us three sets and I was like, let me be greedy and say, hey, we'll do a Zeppelin set, you know? And we had never done anything like that to that time. And so it started to really stress us the hell out. But then we started to develop a system, how to learn songs efficiently and quickly, and then like translate them into how we're going to play them and not like be so sacred about, we're not a tribute band. We're never going to be a tribute band. We will cover the hell out of some songs.
Right.
But, then we've also played like 250 shows a year for now, almost 6 years now. So it's like, to not be playing every week feels wrong in my body, you know?
Definitely. Your brain chemistry I went through the same thing. Now, granted, we skydived down from playing that many shows to barely any, but it's the same thing. Like to not have to prepare for something is kind of like, that's weird.
Right. But
like,
you're still playing every week, aren't you? Don't you play with church?
Not every week, like every now and then. Yeah. But that's the same thing. It's like, I don't want to sit in a room full of 700 people.
Right. Where are you most excited to play? Back home, like Detroit or?
You know, it's weird because I don't know. We don't know where we're going to go, but at this point it's like, give us anything. You know what I mean?
Whoever calls first, I'm like, yeah, totally. We're all like, we've all been vaccinated for our first shot. So.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm still down. Like we haven't gotten into the phase where like the normal people can just get it yet down here. Yeah. So.
Well, I work for Walmart technically doing like delivery driver stuff for them when I'm not working. So that was like, I felt kind of weird. You know, it was one of those moral like quandaries. It was like, technically, yes, I am eligible to get this because of my job. It says it right there.
Right.
But should I? And then one of my healthcare worker friends was like, they have the, just go get your dose. Yes.
Yeah.
It's fine.
there's going to be so many. And that's the thing is, I haven't been there. There's only been one time that I was traveling. I was in a plane, did a studio gig in Austin and then in Nashville. And I was like, not worried that I was going to get it, but like, I definitely wiped the seat down before. Like I was definitely that guy, two masks on the plane.
Yep.
And man, when I got to Nashville, it was like, why does my chest hurt? Oh no, did I get it? And then the anxiety starts and you're like, oh no. But I ended up, just basically fell asleep and I was fine.
Yeah.
Took a shot of whiskey and I was good to go. So
I flew to Wisconsin and had the exact same, like a double mask, chest pain right after you get off the flight. Like, I'll definitely have it. All right, that's it. Great.
Awful. Tonight you're playing a show. As we record this, it's Friday, so you're playing a show tonight. Is this isn't with Team Pacific, right? This is Tequila Sun Guys, right?
Okay. This is going to be out of hand. That was last night. It was Tequila Sun Guys.
Okay.
That's just another cover thing. And then tonight is Soup Knife, which is a jazz funk, like chill hop duo with our keys player, and it's very much all improvised and very Soup Knife-y.
So you literally just show up. You kind of have an idea of what you're going to play, but it could all just change.
Yeah, like I think the only song we've ever actually played together was like a Modesky Martin and Wood song, but I didn't even know we were playing it because our keys player is just, he's so good that I could just,
yeah,
you know, I'm just dancing around the kit, like having fun, like barely, like I can't really hold a groove for too long because he's off to the next idea. So it's kind of just like him chasing me or me chasing him for 3 hours straight. It's great.
Is that hard? Like your brain quick switching like that? Or is it just more like just go have fun and try new stuff?
The hardest part is like, you know, like when you have a gig and you've had a bad day or something and you're just like not in the mental place for like a gig.
Most of my gigs, yes.
to having to think when you're already not there is very hard. But that I try to really like make things light those days that we're going to play. And like also just fucking who cares? It's just music.
So, it's just music. Yeah. And especially if you know it's straight up like, okay, this is going to be, like you said, kind of a in and out jazzy whatever.
Yeah.
It like improvised thing. Like, okay, at that point, you're just kind of background noise for a bar, right? Like it's not.
We played some patio gigs this summer and it was freaking awesome. Like we were just going off, having a lot of fun with each other. And I would bring my like electronic pad and load it with a bunch of weird sounds and old wrestling, old wrestling theme songs and stuff. And we just kind of like go
That's
off.
Amazing.
People are just having cocktails, like we're, you know, like dressed up for a night out. And we're just over there, like we face each other too. And away from the audience, we just face at each other. And they're background noise to us.
That's awesome.
We're the background noise to them, but we feel the same way. We're just like,
yeah, you're just there making noise. Yeah. That's awesome. So on top of all that, we have Wild Adriatic, Tequila Sun Guys, Tame Pacific, and Soup Knife. You guys also do a Led Zeppelin tribute too, right? Now, who's in that band?
That's just Wild Adriatic doing Led Zeppelin.
Misty Mountain Hop, right? Like that's kind of what you've called it.
Yeah, it's called Misty Mountain Hop, and we actually have only done one official show as Misty Mountain Hop
because
this whole idea was working, and I had a bunch booked for last year, but then you know what happened.
Of course, yeah. So, but that's in the future. You're gonna go do Zeppelin stuff, like that's there, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is we just like to have available opportunities. Like I have a whole like one sheet of like what we can do as far as like we could do a whole Prince Zeppelin night. We can do a whole Talking Heads Zeppelin night where we mash up, you know, like all this stuff that we've worked so hard on for a decade. Like we have it all in our back pockets now. So we just offer it like and people call sometimes for it. So we do it like some people call now just because they know we'll like tailor something for an event. Like one of my buddies was like, hey, we're a New Orleans themed restaurant. Will you do a Mardi Gras like funk show? And we're like,
wow,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, let's learn some meters and we learned, you know, some Dr. John and like really got into it, the music for a while. And it was really fun. So we don't mind
doing
it at all.
Any other bands? That's the funny thing is I had the list or whatever, but what else? Like even if it's just like you said, like Soup Knife, like you just said, it's kind of like it's a band, but it's like what else are you doing? Or have you just spread yourself that far across every genre that you can just to be able to go out and do it every night?
That's pretty much the reason. I mean, I play with Sarah Potenza. She's out of Nashville. When we can, like usually we play a lot of the same festivals and stuff. Like she plays the Rock Boats too. And so she took me on one of the Melissa Etheridge cruise with her. And that was really fun. But,
that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm on call for a few different people. And there's this band up in North that I've recently started jamming called, Northern Exposure. And they're like a female fronted sort of like blues rock act. And,
cool.
Yeah. So that's just something to keep me a bit like my fiance, she dances Tuesdays and Thursdays nights. So I'm like, all right, Tuesday and Thursday nights are my jam nights, so I just like spread myself around, and every Tuesday's Thursday I'm somewhere else playing. So.
Oh, that's cool though.
Yeah,
well, it's nice to have that availability where you can just be like, these are my nights. You've done it for so long and you've committed yourself to it, where it's just like, I can go out, not pick and choose, but almost just like I'm just going to go play. It doesn't matter what it is or who it's for. I'm just going to go play, right? It's a good way to have it set up that way, which is nice.
Yeah, the road will really kill your ego, so... That's one of the best ways to kill your ego is to go tour for a couple years.
Yeah, no joke. All right, so let's get into gear, man. So you have several drum sets. Obviously, you talked about your Ludwig kit. Do you have a kit specifically for kind of each project that you're doing, or do you just kind of have your go-to and that's it?
Well, I used to, but now for live, like, I work with Natal drums. And
okay, yep.
I just, like, they... I got so sick of worrying about my 65 Ludwigs getting bashed or, you know, and like not that, like most drummers, 95% of drummers are totally respectful, totally awesome dudes with drums and know how to use them. But it's just the fear of that 5%, you know? So I just hooked up with Natal, got a drum set for like $800 from them. And it's been on the road with me for 4 years and it's beat to shit, but it sounds great. So I use it for everything live now because there's really no reason. But recently, actually, I got one of those Pearl Rhythm Traveler kits.
Yeah, nice.
It's my little bar kit, because now I can do... I got that and the Yamaha Crosstown hardware, that aluminum stuff.
It's the best thing ever, right?
Dude, oh my God, that little carry case, it's so tight. I got four bags, and I'm in and out of a bar, like, you know? It's so great. So, I mean, that's what I'm all about convenience now, and, like, not having my... Because I have a really nice DW kit. It was the first kit I ever got. That was what I was touring with... when I was like in a band that was signed to Drive Through Records, and we got into a huge van accident, a semi took out the trailer and like totally flattened the other drummer's Gretsch kit. He had one of those Gretsch, like the one with the silver and the black stripes, you know, the classic Gretsch Catalina kit. So it flattened it. And mine was on cases. So my DW was fine, except for a cracked floor tom. But after that, I was like, how can I tour with something so nice?
Yeah, no, it's I totally understand. What kind of wood is that Natal kit?
It's tulip wood, actually.
Tulip wood, interesting.
Yeah,
I have heard it. I guess I've seen you play it, right? Like,
yeah, it's a cheaper.
Sounds great.
It's a cheaper wood. Like, it's one of their, like, I don't know. It's like their mid level kit. It's not a very high end kit, but I don't know, man. It came with Evan's heads on it too, and I was just like. For taking it out of the box, it took me 5 seconds to tune it up, and I was just like, this sounds great. Let's go.
Yeah, so, interesting. Yeah. That's cool. How about cymbals? What are you playing now?
I play Dream cymbals.
So okay. I love them. An endorsement with them?
Yeah. I'm bad at maintaining it, but I do technically. Like when I do reach back out and need something, they'll always be like, oh, yeah, can you sign the contract again too? Because every year you forget to do that.
Like, you have to sign up every year?
Yeah,
like,
they send
away.
They send an artist agreement every year, I think, or maybe it just updates every few years. But either way, I get the email and then be like, I will definitely do that later, and then I go off into the world and forget that it ever happened.
Yeah. What are your go-to dream symbol?
For rides? I love their Energy series. I have this big. I just got a big 22-inch from them that sounds it's the perfect mix between what I like, and then Crashes is mostly like a Bliss and a Contact, super thin, dark.
And you're running, you do a ride, two Crashes, right? And a hi-hat, obviously.
Or yeah.
More than that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It's really per show, like, or how I'm feeling, like, laziness-wise. But I like to throw a China cymbal up to the right if I can. In a real perfect world, I'd have double China, you know, up real high on left and right.
That's
give
right.
Give me that Styx vibe, but, you know, I don't want to set that shit up or carry it, so.
I guess I say recently because we lost 2020. When you guys went out, when we had talked about this, I think briefly, just talking back and forth one day, you went all in ears, right? Like you were doing wedges for a while, and now you're all in ears. What ears are you using?
So we were on the 64s for a while, the 1964 audio ones.
Yep.
But the cable kept having cable issues. So we ordered these KZs off Amazon. They're made in China. $39 is the pair that I use.
Yeah.
I use it every damn day, and I have not had a problem with them since.
So. I've heard good things about them. Like, I've had a lot of friends that are just like, I'm just going to go for this, and if it's, you know, if it doesn't work after whatever, like, it's just like buying a good pair of headphones, or, you know what I mean? Like, why not? And, yeah, they've had no issues. They're, like, in love with these things.
Yeah, cool. Dude, really. I mean, for $40, it's like, you know, it's hard. You know, it's not barely a gamble.
Yeah, no joke. What are your go-to heads?
I use Evans stuff, and I mean, so on my DW kit, I like the hydraulics.
Okay.
Because they just provide this really bright poppy sound. I love it. And honestly, I haven't really found, I mean, just G1s, you know, over the toms for like my Ludwigs, and then G2s on the Natals.
Yeah, just kind of classic, right? It gives you that classic thing.
Just basic, you know.
You coated or clear? Obviously, the hydraulics clear being clear, right? But
yeah, I like everything else coated though, pretty much. Like the one thing that bothers me about Evans is those freaking frosted snare drum heads. Like,
just give
me a white coating. I don't know why it feels lame, but it feels lame. It feels like I'm wearing drum gloves, but I'm not.
Yeah, drum gloves are not the cool thing to do, but we've all had a pair at some point.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to get a pair. I'm like, as I move into my old age, I'm definitely going to start wearing drum gloves. A bucket hat and drum gloves. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing a guy. There's drum gloves now that will literally, there's something in it where you can put your stick, like it wraps your stick. So you could just like open your hand and your stick's not going to come out.
Sometimes innovation is not necessary.
It is not. I remember talking to the guy about it, and there was a guy sitting there playing. He was like, he's going to play for hours because when his hands get tired, he can just loosen up and kind of do this. But I guess the guy that was playing had really, really bad arthritis. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what they were called. I should have. It's been like 2 or 3 years since I saw it. It was at NAMM or whatever. But the guy had really bad arthritis. He could not hold his sticks like for very long at all. So it looked like the middle finger had a ring, and they stuck the stick in that ring, and the stick would never go away. You could literally go like this and the stick would be fine. Like shoot your arm in the air and the stick would stay with you.
Well, that's genius, and now I feel bad. So
No, and that's the thing. But in my mind, I was like, well, I don't have arthritis in my hands or whatever, but I'm like, I get it, but it's also kind of like, but I still don't know. Like, if I can't hold my stick anymore, that's just it's a sign of me like, you know what, maybe I'll just be a conga player or be a whatever. It's like, I'm just not going to hold sticks anymore. You know, like
I don't mess with sticks.
It sticks at that point. All right, speaking of sticks, what sticks do you, obviously with all this stuff, you probably use a million different kinds, but what sticks do you use and what's like your go-to size?
ProMark 5A Pro Rounds, they're called. They're the little round tip 5A.
Yeah,
really
basic. Because you do a lot of bell work and stuff, just the way you play and stuff. So that ball tip probably, it stays on there. It gives you what you need, right?
Yeah, I love the definition it provides on the ride. Like, it's awesome, and I break too many damn cymbals if I use any heavier sticks, so I just have to stay with 5As.
I'm a 5A guy. I remember when we started going out a lot, I was always like, oh, give me the 5Bs, they'll last longer, blah, 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 and it's like, that's when I started having to ice my hands at the end of the show, because I'm like, just this weight, I'm like, it's tiring me out, and I'll play 5As. I mean, dude, there's times where I'll use a 7A, just because I'm like, whatever, like, yeah. That weight, it's so funny, but like when you're going after it, like that weight does something. But I got a friend who's just like, it doesn't matter what stick it is, it's got to be a 5B. And he was like, sometimes I'll do a 2B. And I'm like, dude, it feels like I'm playing marching sticks with a 2B.
Yeah.
Like, that's
crazy.
You play
SD1s? Get out of here.
Yeah, seriously. So that's my thing too. You don't have to feel bad for that. 5A is kind of, and it's right. It's classic. It's right in the middle. It's going to give you everything you need. It's going to last. So it'd be fine.
It's not offensive.
It's not offensive at all. There's no one that's going to be like 5A. That guy. No, screw that guy. You know?
The 5As will not be canceled. We'll be fine.
Yeah, that's right. No, exactly. So obviously when you're doing the small gigs and your rhythm traveler and stuff, you play, it's just a small four piece kit, but you like your Natal kit and stuff that you've posted, you play backwards from everybody in a way. Like, you play a 12, 10, and what's your floor tom size?
16, yeah.
16, so 12, 10, 16. So do you, like, what brought that on? Why did you choose to flip, I mean, from standard? I mean, standard would be 10, 12, 16 or whatever, but, like, why did you flip your 10 and 12?
I needed something to, like, shake up my playing. I needed something to, like, I don't know, change things and make me have to stick differently and make me have to think differently.
Yeah.
So that ended up being the decision. And then, like, I tried it for a few weeks, and we went on this one tour for 3 weeks, and half the shows had backline kits, and they were all four-piece kits.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, cool. So this is also helpful because it's not going to mess me up for, you know, for a four piece. So
makes sense. Yeah. So have you found that your fills have changed, or like, did you have to think, like you said, you thought differently, but like when you went after it, did you ever make a mistake and go like, do, 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 like make this weird fill that came out, or did you just kind of know where you were going to go and figure it out?
Oh, I do weird stuff still all the time that doesn't make any sense. But it made me stop doing the do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, like just that big, like...
Classic,
you know,
yeah.
You know, it's just such an easy thing. And, like, I get... I don't know if you're like this at all, but I get, like, set in, like, a couple months or, like, a tour. Like, there's, like, one fill. If you listen to the shows back, and I've done this, like, listen to all the recordings, I'm like, shit, man, that... You're doing that one, like, every other fill for 2 hours. What is happening?
I mean, it's when you get in a comfort zone, the tours, yes, but it's the same. Like, I remember we did our second album. I mean, if you listen real closely, it's like, it's all of a sudden you're like, every song has the same feel. It's like, oops.
We just talked about that. We were just in the studio the other day, and I'm like, oh, shit, that's the feel for this record. Trev's like, what do you mean? I'm like, every record, if you listen closely enough, there's one feel. You're like, that's what he's on right now. He just learned that like last week.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the dumb thing too is it was getting to the point where, not that it was so bad. Obviously, if you could sit down and just be creative, then you could figure something out, right? But like, one of my friends here in Raleigh is one of the he's an internet guy. Like, he has bands and stuff, but he's an internet drummer. Like, he's out there doing it. He's phenomenal. I was like, how much for a lesson? And I hadn't taken a lesson in so long. Vocal stuff, of course, but like I haven't taken a drum lesson. It's like, usually I could sit down with a book and figure something out on my own. Yeah. And I'm like, I need to get out of my one, out of eighth notes, out of whatever. And no joke, he was like, yeah, come on down. We went down. I was already out of my comfort zone just going to his place. And I was like, all right, man, don't make it hurt too bad. He was like, let's just do the paradiddle. I was like, all day. All right. Paradiddle. And we're going. And he was like, change your accent. And I'm like, okay. And I did it in the hands. He was like, okay, but now put your feet on the ones, but change your accent on the paradiddle on the E. And it was like, okay. And it was like, and then we started clicking it. I'm like, oh, he was like, now do it on the toms. And I was like, okay. Like, as soon as he started kind of, it's all simple stuff that we know, but it's just like, just take your paradiddle, put it on the toms, change your accent, put your foot in there. And I was like,
yep.
Like, right. It was just like, oh, shoot. And it's like something... I needed just a kick in the butt to be like, just think of it completely different. So then that went huge rabbit hole. And he even reached out. I was like, how's it going? I'm like, you opened up, like, I can do that same fill, but if I change where I put the accent or something, or like I do the same sticking but hit something different, like, it opened up this huge can of worms. So thank you. I appreciate it. So it's a very much, awesome. It's very much like a how can you take what you know and just change it ever so slightly to do something. And then it's like, I started getting creative, and like my bandmate will look at me and be like, no, don't do that. Like, you're being, it's too much. No. I get a lot of that sometimes, especially as we write. Yeah. That's not going to fit with the simple, you know,
I'll let you wear the giant chain and the clock around your neck, but when you start playing these fills, you know.
Yeah, we can look like anything. Yeah. Our whole thing was, dude, the more ridiculous you look, the more engaged people will be, because they're going to be like, what the heck? I've seen like show reviews where I used to wear the flannel, not pajama pants. They were like flannel suit pants and like some weird, like too small, like weird golfer shirt. I remember walking out on stage and people will go, I could hear them going, what is he wearing? And then we just start playing. Yeah. And people, like, by the end of it, they're like, holy crap, they can wear whatever they want. That's why, like, last time I saw you, I think I had your guys' shirt on, a gold chain and a hat. And, like, we drove up, we stopped at Halloween USA and got that stuff for that show.
I was why like, not? What is going on? What Chris is just, and, but the other Chris, he just dresses like a guy. You know, usually, I never see him get too weird on it.
The crazy thing is, so back in the day, we used to wear stuff. We used to wear like furry stuff, like boas and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they got.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some of those pictures.
I think he kind of got self-conscious. And then it was like, all right, then because then he wore his bow. He did his bow tie, like male, like milk truck kind of thing for a long time. And then we had people sign us. Did you ever do that? Where like, I wore a white shirt and white pants, and I, for a whole U.S. tour, and then we went to Europe into the same, like, wore the same clothes every show, which was crazy. But then we had people sign us. So, when, like, we, if they wanted an autograph, they would have to sign us.
We had a book like that. We didn't. We never did the clothes, but we do have a book somewhere with full of signatures.
It's kind of, the clothes was kind of funny. I, you know, but you, I'm also like
it?
You. Oh, I still have my shirt.
That's,
yeah, the
sick.
Pants. The pants didn't make it from home from Germany.
There's poop stains on there. So
it wasn't even a poop stain. It was more like, I remember, I think the last show we did, I did something and I was putting the back line back in like the trailer, and it went in and out of the bus, no problem. I put it back in the trailer and I turned and I just like, from the center crotch, just all the way. And I went, it's a good thing we're going home, because this would be a nightmare for everyone else. So, yeah, I think I just threw those pants away. But I definitely still have that shirt. It's in one of my bass drums. Like, it's just like the cloth that's whatever.
Nice.
So,
that's awesome.
But I do remember, like, yeah, I had sleeves on it when it started. And, you know, I think we would wear the same stuff on tour. Like, I'm always like, I can't wear like gym. I would always wear gym shorts, but I couldn't wear gym shorts because I slide too much from me thinking I'm moving a lot, but I'm not. But yeah, I'll just wear pants and a tank top all day, every day if I could. And I feel like there's a lot of pictures of you playing pants and a tank top.
That,
like,
is, yeah, our vibes are very similar. Do you remember the first show we ever played? Like, yeah, I had that, my beard on the merch, but your beard was on a t-shirt of yours at the time too. Like, it was like
it?
That. Yeah, it was like a black shirt with like yellow and white print.
Oh, it literally said "Fear the Beard." That was a Pittsburgh Steelers football player. That wasn't like our shirt.
Oh, I thought that was you.
It wasn't us. No, but that's why I wore it, because I bought that and it was like,
no,
oh,
no,
shoot.
It said "I am Dynamite." I had the shirt. There was like a little silhouette of your beard. It was like big, big full body print, black t-shirt.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. It said "I am Dynamite" down the center. I forgot about
that. I made
fun
of you for it, because I was like, look at your little cute little beard on your shirt, buddy. That's nice.
Look at my shirt. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's right. And you're courageous. You've done the whole, you've gotten rid of it all. You went just mustache for a minute. This was a couple years ago, right? But like,
yeah. I will not. I couldn't shave off the mustache. I can't go completely clean because it's got to be a nightmare under there, just like totally, to be totally shaven. No way.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
Nothing's sacred anymore. I shaved
it
off.
I did that one time, and my wife looked at me and just kind of goes, don't ever do that again.
Like, not the vibe at all.
So my daughter, my oldest daughter, she was probably 4 or 5 at the time, so knew who I was. I always had facial hair. I mean, always. As soon as I could grow my chin, I always had a little chin thing, and then I was an early connector, so I could connect my beard pretty early on. Because, you know, there's those guys that can rock the Wolverine chops, and then like they can get this little thing going. But then as soon as that mustache connects to your beard, it's beard time, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was able to do that, and like, so I always had a beard, and then I shaved it off, and it was just because I was, you know, cleaning it up, and I went and just cut like a little bit too close to my chin and went, screw this. And I took it all off and I walked downstairs, and my daughter, my seed, she wouldn't come near me. She had no idea who I was. She was looking at me. Yeah. She was looking at me like, it's your voice, but I don't know who you are. Like, it was a very weird vibe. So yeah, I have 3 kids now. There's no way. They're never going to see me.
You don't want to traumatize these kids.
Unless there was something medical where I had to shave my face. It's never coming off. I can't do it. Like,
yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, the beards are here to stay. That's good. Good news. All right, so the only last thing that I had, unless you have a story that you'd like to share or some bit of knowledge that we didn't talk about, we had talked about a little bit of kind of the way you play, your vibe, the way you got to where you are. I looked on your Instagram and your thing. Instagram, by the way, your Instagram is Mateo Thinks. That's across the board. That's kind of your thing, right? Like, Mateo Thinks is Twitter, Instagram. That's
yeah,
you.
Yeah. That's me. Yep.
So you put on there, radiate love, hug life, play drums, and explore. That's like your life wrapped up in a sentence, basically, right?
It is certainly what I aspire for it to be.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't want to get too serious with this podcast, because again, it is about love, it is about drums and the love of drums, but like, when you say radiate love with where we're at as a country and all this kind of stuff, like, it's good to see, you know, you, anybody, just this is what we have to strive for. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, but that to me gets that. When I read that, I was like, man, that's pretty cool that you, like, not that you're taking a stand, but that's you in a nutshell. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously Hug Life, where we are now, is the hugs, and you hugged everybody all the time. You want to hug, you want to spread that sweat, and now we can't, and it's probably driving you crazy, right?
It's a little rough. I make my fiance hug me like a lot more now, and she's like, "Why, you're very huggy." I'm like, yeah, I don't get any hugs, man.
The funny thing is, too, is even before COVID and all this stuff, like, we were kind of the same way. We wanted to hug. I would say, meet us by the merch area. We want to spread our sweat onto you. Like, I would always say that from stage or something like that. And it did. People would want to hug. And there was, honestly, there was several times where someone was like, I need a hug. And I'd give them this huge, nasty, wet bear hug. And one guy, there was a time where, dude, there was a guy in Detroit, never met him before, and he cried. Like, it was more just like, he had a great time at the show. I wasn't anybody else. I was just another human being, and he just wanted a hug, and I gave him a hug, and he was like, I don't know why I'm crying. And it was like, that's it. But with COVID and stuff, we were always pre-COVID and stuff, we were always very like, we don't want to get sick. Like, we're touching a lot of people, shaking hands, kissing babies, and all this, obviously the regular stuff. But like, when you hug someone, you're getting in there. And then it's like, sometimes it's crowds and you're, doing this and whatever. And the funny thing is I never, ever got sick on tour, but I was always the guy. I always had hand sanitizer, and I would go, fingers to elbows, like, after every show.
Really?
But my bandmate would always get sick. He always would get the flu. He'd get a raspy voice all the time, every single tour, until he started doing that. So the funny thing is now is like, in the van, we'd always get the giant like hand sanitizer like tubes. Our steering wheel in our old van was like worn down because we'd all get like 5 squirts. Me, Spike, and Martin, and we'd sit there and just like, everywhere. I'd put it on my neck. Like, if someone touched me somewhere, I'd immediately get hand sanitizer.
So good for your skin, dude.
It's not good. We'd rub the steering wheel like all the time, and it was just like. Yeah, but the funny thing is like, for how silly that was.
Smart.
That was back in the day, and now, now it's kind of like, oh, yeah. So
what's
my
up?
Tip to you.
I was right.
Yeah, my tip to you is get a giant thing of hand sanitizer and bathe in it.
Dude, I'm going to wear, I hope people don't get offended, but I think moving forward on tour at meet and greets and stuff, at least until most people, I'm going to be masked up,
Oh, yeah. And I don't see
why we wouldn't.
That's the new norm. I'm going to be one of the last people to. The funny thing is like, we used to wear headbands and stuff. I literally would just took my headband and put it down here. It's literally the same thing. If I could play in it, I would. But you're right, man. I think the new musician norm is going to be maybe not even. That's the thing. It's going to be weird. I think bigger bands, they're going to be definitely social distancing. You're 6 feet this way and I'm back here kind of thing. For us, the bands that still go to the merch area and talk to people, hug, that kind of stuff, like, it's going to be a mask situation and whatever, and hopefully we're going to get past it, we're going to do all this stuff, but hopefully nothing else comes of this or some other strain doesn't show up and wipe out the music industry again.
I know, yeah, fingers crossed on all that, but as much as we can, we're doing what we can to be responsible and safe and try to move forward with some sort of normalcy. So, hopefully people, the cool thing about the hug thing is that people know that they can hug you. Like after someone comes to your show and you're like, oh, come to the merch table and grab a hug after there if you need it, then people are like, now people, I was in Wisconsin with my mom and someone on the street was like, hey, Mateo, can I get a hug? And my mom's like, who the fuck, what the hell, and I'm like, yeah, of course, maybe that person really needed that hug, or maybe they just saw me and were like, oh yeah, I like hugs or whatever, or it was funny to them or whatever it is, like, that's awesome, just the fact that people know that, you're open to that, and like, that guy crying, those moments, like, you'll never forget that, he doesn't even know
I'll
why
never
he's
forget
crying.
That it's cool I don't even hell, know though. What I don't remember what his name was at all, but it was more, is that same thing, like, he needed it and I was willing to give it, and it was totally fine. And it could have been, who knows what he was going through or if he was going through anything, but why not? Like, yeah. There's nothing but positivity coming from, you know, coming from people when it's, when there's negative, even when you're in a bad mood. There's times where, like, even if we, I had to force, say, like, come to the merch area and hug us, or, like, you know, being in a van with somebody, there's times where we just don't talk. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you get annoyed or whatever. Like, when you're on tour, it's like you're with a, you know, with your wife. You'll find out soon enough. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's times where it's just like, you just need to be away. But I could be in the worst mood ever, don't want to hug anybody. But it's just like, oh, man, like, that guy really – it's like immediately flips you, like, your life does not suck right now. Like, you're in whatever town doing what you love, and you just gave that guy a hug and probably made his freaking year. You know what I mean? Like, who knows what anyone's going through? And if I have any sort of thing to stand on, and if you just want a hug, yeah, I'll give you a hug. It's not a big deal.
That's – yeah. That's probably the biggest silver lining of this year, is, like, just a reminder. For me, it was a hard reset of, like, oh, yeah. Don't be a fucking dick on a Tuesday in Iowa because you're mad that there's only 12 people there. Because you're really, it's all, you're afraid. I'm afraid that my career isn't going well. And that's, and then I'm act out because I'm afraid of all of that. But that guy that came with his wife and got a babysitter and spent $75 on dinner and drinks and $25 on tickets, like, he came for an escape. How dare you? Like, treat that with anything less than the utmost respect. Like, and so that really, like, we got on stage for a full band show a couple weeks ago for that Mardi Gras show. And this restaurant was distanced, tables 6 feet apart, but every single seat was full. So, you know, people were, they were out. Felt a little uncomfortable, but it was such a good feeling, like, to be on stage. And I literally said it in the middle of the show, like, I will never take this for granted again. So, if that's the only silver line I get out of this, that's a pretty big gift. So I appreciate it.
I really like that you put all that, and this just goes back to, like you said, radiate love, hug life, play drums, and explore. I think that's a good way to live life. I'm appreciative of you living your life that way. It's been cool. Any last words that you'd like to say to everybody and give your hellos and goodbyes?
No. I mean, I just, you know, I really do want to reiterate, you know, how much my father has been a big influence, and how I owe my entire career and obviously my life to him. But
of course,
I think that's, you know, I think that's super cool. It's something I've really started to really understand how big that was for me now later in life, where I'm like, oh yeah, without him, none of this is possible. Well, I wouldn't be here in this one bedroom apartment in Glens Falls, New York.
Right.
But no, I just want to thank you very much, man. I think it's so cool that we've, like, maintained this friendship over the years of, like, meeting randomly at a wing festival at a Great Escape. So it's dope, man.
It's so weird, right? And the funny thing is my connections to that. I just had a friend that moved down here from Glens Falls. She had no idea that we'd ever played up there or whatever. And she lives down here in Raleigh now. And I'm like, oh, that's so weird. Like, I have I've gotten tattoos up there from my buddy Skip. Like, we're up there all the time. Now, for people that don't know, Glens Falls is, like, north of Albany. So if you know where Albany, New York is, it's about an hour north, right?
Yep.
So, it's kind of all, you could almost say it's a suburb of Albany. Kind of.
It's just a town.
Just a town. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And, I love you, man. It's good to see you.
Love you too, bro. Let's do some shows when we can, man.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to Boom Chuck, a drummer's podcast. You can find me at Boom Chuck on Instagram, and then obviously on Facebook, Boom Chuck, a drummer's podcast. I want to thank Matteo Voskanian from Wild Adriatic. You can find him at Matteo Thinks on Instagram and Twitter, and then Wild Adriatic, obviously at Wild Adriatic. If you're up in the New York area, you can see his band's probably pretty much playing every day in the Albany Glens Falls area. So here is Matteo. The song is Appleton. I'll take you out with this. Thank you so much for listening to Boom Chuck, the Drummer's Podcast.